Welcome to the Attractions Group Podcast. This is episode 90. God, we're getting up there. Alongside Don Helbig, I'm Ryan Sir. Don, how are you doing today?
Doing good. How about you, Ryan?
I am doing just amazing. It's a beautiful night. It's warm out. It's becoming spring, and I love becoming that spring. Stuff.
And yeah, best weekend of the year with the NFL draft, too. So a lot to be excited about this time of year.
Yeah, the USFL or the XFL or whatever it is now will start up soon. We're all thrilled about that. Before we get started, remember to follow us on all your favorite podcast apps, Apple, Google, Spotify. You know the drill. We do have we have a video version of the podcast on YouTube. So if you're watching that, thank you. Please hit that subscribe button. And follow us on X/Twitter/whatever it's called now at @attractions_GRP. Don, kick us off.
Well, you know, the amusement theme park industry, it's comprised of a lot of really good people. And our guest on the Attraction Group podcast this week is one of those people. We'd like to welcome to the Attraction Group podcast, Steve Gorman. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic tonight. Thanks for asking.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the show. Appreciate you being on. Can you share with our audience a little bit about you and your role at Waldemere?
Sure. Okay. So I have a mechanical background. I went to UVA and got a master's degree, and I worked at GE for 10 years on aircraft engines and then locomotives, but I got a little lost interest in the big corporate life, and I decided to join my wife's family's amusement park business. And so for the last 28 years, I worked alongside my father-in-law, Paul Nelson, to learn the amusement industry, and I started pretty much doing financial things and ride operations. But, you know, pretty much over all those years, I've been involved with all aspects of the business, of course, and now I'm the president and general manager, and all new projects in the past 20 years I've been involved with, and it's been a really fun ride.
Well, Steve, you opened the gates for the 2024 season on May 4th. You'll initially start with weekend operation before you go daily. That's your 128th year as a park there. Talk about what goes into getting the park ready to open for a new season.
Well, like any seasonal business, and especially in the amusement industry, it's a big cycle. And I've done it 28 times. So it's reoccurring. And to get started in the spring, we have to go through a big cleaning process and resetting all the rides and testing them. Hiring is a big part of the spring, and it's challenging. All of our year round work, our staff members have to get excited again and ramp up so we get ready, and then finally one day we get to open the gates and see all this, hopefully the happy faces when they come and walk it in.
So, I mean, this has always been a thought. I mean, you're obviously your general manager, and your family's in an equity position in the park. So what does it feel like when you open the gates that first day? Is it nerve-wracking? Is it exciting? Like, what kind of emotions go through your head?
I lost your question, Ryan. I'm so sorry.
Oh, you're okay. I was just saying you're in a position in the park as a general manager. When you open the gates for the season, what kind of emotions go through you? Is it exciting? Is it scary? Is it nerve-wracking? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good question. For me, it's exciting. It's almost like spring for everyone else, where, you know, the birds are starting to come around again, and the flowers are starting to grow, and life seems to be springing up again. And it's like that for me, too. It's the excitement is there. Anticipation of the opening day and trying to be ready for a big party, basically. That's how I look at it.
Okay. Now, Steve, you picked the industry, and staffing seems to be a big challenge. So how do you deal with those staffing issues, especially early in the season?
Well, recruitment is very challenging with any business. We have been fortunate that we have not gone of trying to get J-1 visa students. We've been able to get enough staff, or nearly enough staff, each year with just local hires, not going the J-1 visa route. And we go to every high school and sit in their cafeterias and try to recruit people. We put signs up in their schools. We do as much as we can. Actually, this spring, we're using TikTok a lot, and that's been very helpful.
Wow. That TikTok, didn't see that one coming. But so, you know, when we're coming up on opening Waldemere for the 2024 season, what do you guests have to look forward to in the upcoming season?
For this summer, we pretty much took a pause on any new attractions, but we did a lot of upkeep and improvements, but a lot of it will not be noticeable to the casual observer, you know. And but I think we're going to be able to ride the wave of the Rocket Blast from last year, which was a big new water attraction we put in that was very popular. I think that will continue into this year. And we did not increase prices for this year. So we're trying to make, but we did a lot of things. We're trying to be more efficient in our operations. And so the guests will be enjoy our park more, make traffic flow a little bit easier as well. So not a big year for exciting things to do, but to announce or market. But I think that the next few years are going to be very, very exciting.
Right.
But you mentioned you did not raise prices for 2024. Talk about that a little bit. What was the reasoning behind, you know, keeping prices flat when everywhere else in the industry, you know, you look around, I mean, it seems like everyone has kind of had a price increase.
Yeah. So risk, you know, inflation is still high. Last year we usually kind of pick our price increases based on what we're investing in the park, what new attractions. So since, like I said, we're not putting something big in, we felt that how can we justify upping the price a lot? Although I wanted to go 1 year to have it flat and take a risk and see if it increases the attendance. Just take a gamble and see what happens.
So, you know, speaking from the perspective of somebody that, you know, runs the park, runs the daily operation. So 2024 season is about to begin at Waldemere. At what point in the season, or has it happened already, do you start looking forward to 2025? When does the planning, like hardcore planning, start to begin for the next season after you open up for the previous season?
Well, for all the years I've been there, the first 20 years or so, Paul would decide in July of that summer, did we make enough money this year to do something new next year? And then we would always have something in the back of our mind that we wanted to do, but could we afford it or not? And then we would talk to manufacturers and get it going. And there would be time enough to get it done before the next spring. But with supply chain issues lately and manufacturers being a little bit harder to find, you know, there's not as many manufacturers, in my opinion, since there was when I first started. And they're backloaded as well. And so this winter, even though we didn't do a lot of new things for this summer that we're starting right now, we spent a lot of time planning the next 3 years. And we have some unannounced plans for the next 3 years that, like I said, I think are going to be very exciting. So to answer your question in short form, we've already started looking at 25, 26, and 27 and made good plans.
Awesome.
All right. Well, your star attraction at Waldemere Park is the Ravine Flyer 2. Can you share the inspiration behind the design of this wooden roller coaster? I mean, it's a fantastic ride.
Well, there was a Ravine Flyer 1 that operated at Waldemere 1922 to 1938. And it traveled in very much the same path as or footprint as the current ride we have. So Paul, as a young man, based, you know, he always wanted to bring that ride back. So it was a 40-year dream of his to bring that back, the roller coaster. He wanted to wait until he could basically be financially ready for it. And so he talked for years to Custom Coasters, or, you know, the prelude to Custom Coasters. And basically that was the dream, and he finally fulfilled it.
No, that had to have felt really good to, you know, finally be able to fulfill that dream that, you know, he's had of rebuilding the Ravine Flyer. So what unique challenges did you face when building Ravine Flyer 2?
Probably the biggest challenge was because we built on the side of the bluff, or like you said, goes into a ravine. Mm-hmm. The DEP, or Department of Environmental Protections, was trying to stop that because they were concerned about erosion. So that was the biggest challenge. It took us, I think it was really 3 or 4 years to get past that hurdle and solve that. Building the bridge across the road, you would think would be a big challenge, but that only took 2 years to get the highway department to approve that. And then there was neighbors that didn't want the coaster so close to their property, and we had to fight with their legal team. But so I would someday like to write a book about the process, because it took literally 10 years since we announced and really made serious plans to have the coaster to finally fulfill it.
That's a lot of planning involved. So the Ravine Flyer 2, it's celebrated for its surprise elements and unique track layout. How did you approach designing a coaster that, you know, keeps the riders guessing and delivers that unexpected experience? And you can ride this multiple times and you're still going to have that element of surprise, it seems.
I give the credit to Gravity Group Custom Coasters initially, of course, that we built, to look at the site. And we, you know, pretty much, like I said, we gave him the footprint of the old coaster and said, we want to follow that rough path, but we wanted it to be smooth. The first pass they drew at the design had a turnaround across the street, as I call it, was 360 and a spiral. And we didn't like that because we both felt that those were kind of boring when you ride a roller coaster. So we made that change. And another thing that Larry Bill determined was when he dropped the second big drop goes lower than the first drop on the ground, he was able to do that with the topography. And then he could continue the pace of the ride and keep the speed up doing that lower drop. So I give all the credit to Larry Bill and his design team to make that ride as good as it is.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, the standout feature when anyone thinks of Waldemere, whenever they think of Ravine Flyer 2, they think about how it crosses the road. Can you hit on it before, but can you talk about some of the logistics that were involved in designing, building, and having a coaster approved that crosses a public road?
Well, the interesting story about that is kind of long, but I'll back when the coaster was the first coaster was there, Ravine Flyer 1, it crossed the road. However, that road was really almost a dirt path to the beach area that was not a state park at the time. And so when the state wanted to build a road to the beach and it become a state park, it was our property all the way, and they had to get an easement to go down through our property. And the deed required the owner at the time was smart enough to say in the deed it had to specify that we could have a roller coaster. So when we went to PennDOT, which is our Department of Transportation in Pennsylvania, and said, okay, we want to have you approve a bridge for our roller coaster, they pretty much laughed at us. And then we pulled out the deed and said, well, why don't you look at this? And it says that we can do it. And they said, oh, I guess we got to talk to our legal team. But it was like I said, 2 years before that, we finally got through that legal process with the Department of Transportation. And we had to sign a document that had lots of clauses that we promised to do. One of them was we had to build a cover over the bridge so nothing could fall off, which makes sense. It mm-hmm. had to be blue because they didn't want people to be distracted when they're driving down the road. They want to look like the sky. We were not allowed to put signs on the bridge because that might distract drivers. And one of the last things I thought was really funny was we had a sign that we would never, ever have a coaster car come off the track and land on the road below it.
That's a fair concession.
That's like saying I'm never going to ever be hit by lightning. Like you can't, you know, but anyway, it was a challenge, but it was not insurmountable because the owner previously was smart enough to have that in the deed.
Now it debuts and it wins the Golden Ticket Award for the best new ride that year. Tremendous achievement. you know, definitely helped put Waldemere, you know, on the map for a lot of coaster enthusiasts, made it a, you know, kind of a destination for them. But what do you think made Ravine Flyer 2 stand out among its, you know, I guess rides that were competing for that award that year?
Well, for me, well, first of all, for me, after all that effort we went through to build a ride, I just wanted it to be a good ride. I wasn't trying to make it the best in the world or anything, but once we opened it, I realized that this is really a fun, this is really a fun ride. And I think the media attention for our, all of our challenges. And then, so we had a lot of attention for that. And then just the sheer fact that Gravity Group did an awesome job of designing it, I think that was what caused it to win. And we, you know, and I went around to five or six coaster events in the winter, talk it up. So I tried to spread the word pretty well about how our coaster was going to be fun. And I was just very tickled that it was a really good ride when I first rode it.
You know, for me, you know, one of the things that, you know, you notice about Ravine Flyer 2 is, you know, it's not the tallest, not the fastest, not the longest, doesn't set any records, but still one of the best rides in the world. So, you know, it doesn't have to have all those other accolades with it to be a fantastic ride.
Well, I agree. You know, I ride the Voyage, and I think that's an awesome ride, and it's the high rankings that it does. But I don't think it's very re-rideable. We wanted, you know, our ride, you can go around it multiple times and not even get off, and you can enjoy it. I think it's smooth, very smooth, and we work very hard off season each year to maintain the smoothness of the ride by keeping it up to snuff, you know. And we spend a lot of money on the upkeep of it.
So that kind of transitions to my next point. So Ravine Flyer 2 is, you know, more than a decade old, but it still maintains that reputation of being an excellent ride. It's still in the forefront. Besides just the regular maintenance, what do you attribute that to?
I just think it's a really great ride. And the fact that when you're on the ride, you have a great view of Lake Erie. And like you have mentioned, you don't really see where you're going to travel to until you get on and ride it. And I think also, you know, some of those rankings are based on how the park is perceived and the management is perceived. And I think that we embrace the roller coaster enthusiasts who vote. And I hate to say it, but, you know, it's a little bit of a popularity contest too. So I think we maintain a good relationship with the people that vote and treat our guests right so that they enjoy it. Well, you know, we take care of our park, but we also take care of that ride. The cars themselves, we maintain very well.
Talk about the feedback that you receive from riders, you know, over the years. Maybe they rode it when it first debuted and then, you know, maybe not come back for 2 or 3 years. And then, you know, they visited maybe like last year and they ride it again. So what kind of feedback do you get about it?
I think some of the feedback I get is in your situation where you say you might not ride it for a few years and come back, they say, wow, I think it's running faster than what I remember, or it's running very smooth. So I credit that to the maintenance we have. What some things are fun, interesting is that, you know, there was a Ravine Flyer 1 years and years ago, and I'll hear someone in the first few years of its operation, I would hear someone say, you know, I rode the first one, and they'd be like 80 years old. They'd be like 80 years old. And that's really fun to hear.
That's fascinating. So you mentioned some of kind of like the legal battles and stuff like that. Do you have any other like fun anecdotes about the development of Ravine Flyer? I mean, you said you could write a whole book about it. What are some other stories that you have about developing Ravine Flyer, going from, you know, idea pitch all the way to opening?
Yeah. Well, we had to build an access road at the bottom of the hill to build the ride so we could use cranes down there. And that road comes 2 feet from our neighbor's property. He was one of the ones who was fighting the property and, or, you know, the building of the ride. So when we built the access road, we had to pour cement retaining walls, and two feet from his shed. And, you know, we spilled concrete on the shed and, Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, I didn't feel too bad. But another thing was, we also had an agreement with the other neighbors who were fighting it, that the ride had to be built with some tunnels because they wanted to block the sight of the coaster from their viewpoint, you know, and also they wanted to reduce the noise. So we said, of course, we'll put tunnels in because tunnels are fun and they're a great, part of the ride. So we were like, sure. And so they thought we were making a concession, but we were actually improving the ride. Another thing, when we had to build the coaster, we had to drive piles down into the ground, like 50 feet on average, to support the foundations. And it took 8 weeks to do that, 8 weeks of full days, 8-hour days, pounding into the ground these piles. And I'm sure the neighbors were not happy about that, but it didn't break my heart.
Now, for a first-time rider on Ravine Flyer 2, where would you recommend they sit on the train? Is it a front-seat ride? Is it a back-seat ride? Maybe middle of the train? What would you recommend if it's their first time on it?
I think it depends on what kind of coaster rider you are. I personally like to go in the front seat. I like to see where I'm going. It's also, I feel like it's a smoother ride in the front. The back-seat lovers also will like the ride because it's more thrilling. You get pulled over the first drop, as you know, the middle is a little bit more rough. So that's my take. If you want to know the difference between front, middle, and back.
Okay.
So, moving along, you know, you've also got Water World. You know, what are some of the more popular attractions on that side of the park?
In the water park, our ride from last year, the Rocket Blast, is a water coaster, and that proved to be a really good addition. It was the most popular ride. You know, it's in the water park, we don't count the riders as we can do in the amusement park. It's different, and so we don't have good statistics. But I know just by looking at lines waiting for rides, that ride is the best. The wave pool is great because it eats up a lot of people. That's a huge attraction. And of course, people like the Lazy River, but we have a lot of young families really love our children's areas, like our Battle of Lake Erie, which is a themed water park structure. And then there's 8 little slides, kiddie slides. So young families like those attractions. Our old inner tube rides are still fun. The Mat Racer ride is very, very fun.
So let's real quick transition back to the main park. What are some of the other popular rides on that side too, outside of Ravine Flyer 2?
Sure, like I mentioned, we have ridership data. So the Comet, which is our junior wooden coaster, ranks number one as far as ridership, and that's mainly because the throughput is quicker than Ravine Flyer 2. The shorter ride, you know. And we can move them faster. The Thunder River log flume ride was built in 1996, and its log flume rides are very popular. We have two dark rides that the dark ride lovers rank pretty high in their list. They were built by Bill Tracy in the early 1970s.
Yeah. So tell us more about these dark rides. I'd love to hear, Bill Tracy obviously is a pretty famous name. What are your dark rides?
We have a Wacky Shack, which is a ride-through ride. And we have a Pirate's Cove, which is a walk-through, like a fun house. And both of those were built in the early 70s by Bill Tracy. And there's great stories about Bill Tracy, which, you know, I wasn't there when he was installing it, but he was a great guy, I guess. People really liked him. We have maintained them really well, but they're really still a lot of the tricks inside are all the same tricks as they were when they were built. So we haven't tried to update that ride. I wonder someday if we should take the ride through Wacky Shack ride and make it something that has interactive features with a Sally dark ride company. I don't know if people will take that as an insult or if they would embrace it.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit too. You have a long history there. When you do make changes to different rides, do you ever hear, like the negative feedback, because it's always been there and they don't want to see these upgrades or improvements?
Yeah. So if you go back in time when Paul started the water park, he sold off the original carousel, which had wooden horses, and he got a lot of money from the auction, and that was, he used that money to then invest in the water park, which was a great move. It kicked off the water park. Then he bought a Chance Rides merry-go-round, which is fiberglass horses, you know? So I think there was a lot of traditionalists who weren't too happy about that, but I don't think there was that many people who were upset about that. That's one example there. I think it would be difficult to remove something like the Pirate's Cove or the Wacky Shack without a lot of people getting angry about that, you know, but a lot of people know that you got to move on.
You know, what are some of the advantages and disadvantages to having a park that is older and more historic as opposed to something that was built in the last like half century?
The older rides that we have are very robust and they don't require very much maintenance. Their control systems are so much simpler and they don't require a lot of upkeep, to be honest with you. And that's wonderful for maintenance costs. Mm-hmm. And obviously if the newer rides have more complicated control systems and they're more difficult to maintain. Like for instance, the Steel Dragon ride, which is almost like a mouse ride, but it's a spinning coaster. It has about 80 sensors throughout the ride. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the Comet has about 10. So there's way more opportunities for failures of sensors to cause ride shutdowns and nuisance problems.
Now, Steve, food is an important part of any amusement park visit. Waldemere, it's some great American eating. So what are some of your favorite eats and treats at the park?
Well, I really like our pizza. It's just a normal kind of pizza, but I, for some reason, really like the sauce taste and the mozzarella cheese on it. I have a slice almost every day. I like our chicken sandwiches, which are, I think, really good. What's very popular at our park is funnel cakes and French waffles and our homemade fudge. And those are the treats that are unique to us and people really like a lot.
So, you know, just out of curiosity, what's a day-to-day like for you? For your position within the park, like how do you spend I imagine it's not really a 9-to-5, but figuratively speaking, how do you spend your day when the park's open and you're acting as the general manager?
Personally, wow. Well, I get in first and check out my email and see if anything happened overnight that I need to know about. And then I monitor the cleaning crews that are coming in, that are cleaning the park to see if everyone showed up and if they're doing what they should be. And then look at the financial situation to see, this is all before any guests come. The restrooms are something that I always paid attention to. You'll find me actually cleaning restrooms often when the staff is not there or, you know, if the staff's not adequate or things are behind, I do that a lot. So mostly in the morning, I'm trying to make sure the park's getting cleaned and I'll help myself if needed. And then as the parks get open, I'm trying to make sure that all the ride uppers showed up, even though it's not my job, I'm very, very conscious of it. I want to make sure that we're ready for the party. Like I said, I try to instill in our employees that we're throwing a party every day and you're trying to get ready for it. And then when people are there, they're your guests. You want to make sure that they're treated right. And you want to pretend that they're in your home and you want them to come back another day for another party.
Now, Steve, you mentioned earlier the American Coaster Enthusiasts. You've gone and you've spoke at a number of their like winter conferences, whether that's in, you know, like Chicago or, you know, maybe it's the East Coaster event. How did you become aware of ACE?
I didn't really understand what the American Coaster Enthusiasts were all about when we didn't have a big coaster that attracted them. And when I started to talk to ACE about our potential Ravine Flyer 2 roller coaster, I embraced them, and it was very interesting because for me, I finally realized that many, many people in the world have hobbies, and this group just has amusement parks and roller coasters in particular as their hobby. So at first I didn't get it. I'll be honest. I was at one event and I had a really nice shirt on that said Ravine Flyer on it. And it was a pretty cool shirt and unique because it was just for me. And one person came up to me and asked me, "Can I buy your shirt?" And I said, "You mean the one I'm wearing?" He said, "Yes." And I said, "No, it's mine." And so that was one thing I'll never forget, because it taught me that they just really like roller coasters a lot. And so you end up bringing parts that you might throw away, old parts, and they want them for their, you know, for fun and artifacts. And it took me a good year before I really understood what it was all about. And but now they're like my friends. When they come to the park, I see them and I want them to stop me and say hi, because I enjoy their, you know, the relationship. And I also know that there are very good ambassadors to our industry. So you want to make sure that you're good friends with them and treat them right.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So are there any, can you think of any like interesting facts about the park in general that you'd want to share that you think that people may not know who are listening?
Please repeat, Ryan.
Are there any facts about Waldemere that you think are interesting that our listeners may not know about?
Well, let's see. Waldemere is 128 years old. I learned just 2 days ago, by Jim Futrell, they're the fifth oldest continuously operating amusement park in the U.S. So I think that's pretty neat. And I also feel like we have a lot of repeat customers, mostly in our community. And I like to think of it as it's their park. It's the Erie area's park. We're just maintaining it and operating it for them. We're pretty unique that, you know, we're like Knoebels say, that you have free admission, free parking, and you can pay as you go. So we're trying to make sure that all of our guests can, you know, we can suit anyone's budget, whether they want to buy everything or just come in and buy an ice cream cone. And I think that's our niche, which I want to embrace it, that we're a relatively small park, but we offer a good family experience at a budget that hopefully most people can afford.
You mentioned you have a lot of these guests that have come back over the years. So what about employees? Do you have a lot of like seasonal employees that have maybe been there 20, 30, 40 plus years?
Yeah. One in particular, he started when he was 13 years old before he was legally allowed to work, because he was our banker's son and we let him work. This was before my time, but he's still working for us and he's 52 years old. So he's worked there longer than me. He's probably, you know, he's almost 40 years now, and he's great. He's one of our best, you know, he's our best employee pretty much. And a lot of returning seasonal workers are adults, and it's great to have them back because they're mature and they love our park. And that's what's fun about it, when you see someone who really cares about your park and wants to work for you.
What's your favorite part of working for the park?
I don't know if there's one favorite part, but one thing that really I enjoy is when you have a young employee, because most of our employees in the summer are young, obviously. But when you see them 10 or 15 years later and they come, and maybe they'll bring a child or their spouse, maybe not. But either way, if they come back and they stop and say, "Hey, you were my boss when I was a ride operator here, and you helped me learn how, this was my first job and I thought it was great. And you taught me how to have a, you know, how to be a responsible person and have a job. And then you learn that they're a contributing member of the society, like they have a good job, they're an adult. That's to me is rewarding, that we've helped someone grow up and become a good citizen.
How involved are you in the hiring process? You know, when you have the seasonal employees, is that something that, you know, maybe just your HR department handles, or do you actually, you know, get involved? Cause you wear a lot of hats there.
Yes, we do. So my first 25 years, I was one of the main people who did the interviews with my brother-in-law. And then we finally hired an HR person about, well, 10 years ago. So then they took over, but we still, you know, one person can't do all the interviews because there might be 1,000 people coming during the springtime. So we all shared the role a little bit. And in particular, I would help go to schools and talk, like I said, at their cafeterias and such. But 2 years ago, we lost our HR person. So I did HR 2 years ago completely. And it was a challenge. So on top of my other roles. And, you know, even today I'm monitoring what's happening. I'll stick my nose in and talk to some people that I think are promising when I see them being interviewed.
That's very cool. So if people wanted to find out more information on Waldemere, where's the best place to do that?
Well, our website is the best place for all the information, waldemere.com. But we are active on Facebook and Instagram. And I don't even do social media. Can you believe that? And we also have a YouTube channel, but we really don't. We just post things on it that we already have, like our commercials and such. So Facebook and Instagram are great.
Perfect. All right. Well, Steve, we enjoyed having you on the Attractions Group podcast. If we're at the park, we'll certainly look you up. So how often are you out in the park?
Oh, 360 days a year, probably. But during the operation, yeah, I mentioned the morning work, but I'm out in the park 50% of the day, I would say.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it. So whether you're in the Pennsylvania area or just somewhere east of the Mississippi, it sounds like Waldemere is worth the trip to check out that Ravine Fire 2, the water park, and everything else you guys have to offer.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it very much. You know, one thing I'll say is if I'm having a bad day at work and we're open and I'm having a bad day, something's bothering me, I'll just go ride on the Ravine Fire 2. I'll jump in line in front of people, go ride. That's it with you. And I ride with them, and then it just brightens my day.
I thought you were going to say if people come up to me and I'm having a bad day, I take it out on them as like a forewarning. But you don't seem like the kind of guy that would do that.
I'm not big enough.
That's true. Well, thank you again, Steve. Just remember, check out Waldemere next time you're on one of your Pennsylvania coaster trips, everybody.